The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 432 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on the Grizz. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. That's my handle on Twitter. Always appreciate your comments and feedback there. We're at TheSportsRPT. I have to tell you, we are jam-packed today. We have so many topics to get into. Colin Kaepernick says he will continue to sit during the national anthem. The 49ers quarterback has caused quite a stir. My take on his actions coming up. There are three things we're certain of: death, taxes, and Tony Romo getting injured. It happened again, and now all eyes are on the rookie Dak Prescott. And I need your help when it comes to fantasy football. I've got a couple drafts coming up. I am totally confused by the player rankings that I'm seeing on these different websites. This is the first full week of college football, and there are some monster matchups. Maybe the best week one ever. Gary Sanchez has everybody in New York talking about the baby bombers. He's doing things that have never been done before. I also have a Roberts rant regarding an umpire who went off this weekend. All of those stories and more on episode 432 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Keep the five-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. We're with you every Monday, 30 to 40 minutes, high-energy, fast-paced sports talk without the homerism that you're used to. Well, you know where we're going to start. Colin Kaepernick, of course. He's taking a lot of heat for sitting during the national anthem in each of the 49ers preseason games. He's not changing his stance. He said Sunday he's going to continue to sit until he sees real change in the way minorities are treated in the United States. Kaepernick held a players-only team meeting yesterday. Then he spoke with reporters. And I'll say this about him. It wasn't one of those deals where he answered three questions and then he took off out the back door and was gone. I mean, he stood there about 20 minutes and spoke to reporters. Said he's not trying to disrespect the military. That's not his intention at all. He feels minorities are being oppressed in the U.S., and that's where his focus lies. Quote, "These aren't new situations. This isn't new ground. These are things that have been going on in this country for years and years and have never been addressed, and they need to be. I've experienced this. People close to me have experienced this. This has become a habit," end quote. He talked about police brutality and how police are put on paid leave while getting away with murder, his words. He covered several topics, even the presidential candidates. Let's just say he is not a fan of Hillary or the Donald. The 49ers issued a statement basically saying that as American citizens, we have the right to participate or not participate in the national anthem. Chip Kelly, the head coach, said it's not his right to tell Colin what to do. You know, I think everybody forgets. I still remember Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf not standing for the anthem in the NBA, and he was actually suspended one game by the league. I also remember Carlos Delgado, when he was with the Blue Jays, would leave the field during God Bless America, during the Iraq War as a form of protest. So it's not like this is the first time that we've ever seen anything like this. Here's my opinion. I understand that we all have the right to protest in a peaceful manner. We are blessed with a tremendous amount of freedom in this country. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, on and on and on. And I'm extremely grateful for those rights. I know I would not want to live in a country where the government told me what I had to say. As a member of the media, I really value our freedom of expression. However, I think there's a place and time for everything. And during the national anthem, to me, is not the proper place and time. That is a time to be quiet, to be respectful, and think about the great liberties that were afforded as U.S. citizens and the men and women who fought and died for our freedom. Am I saying that Colin Kaepernick should be prohibited from doing what he's doing? No, I'm not saying it. That's his right. But I am saying I think there's a better way to express your beliefs. You know, I've always had a pet peeve with people who are talking during the anthem, people who are eating during the anthem, as if that hot dog can't wait a couple minutes, people who don't remove their hat during the anthem, people looking at their cell phones, whatever, goofing around, laughing. Sorry. While that's being played, you should be paying attention and you should be respectful. My opinion. I'll also say this. I grew up going to church every single Sunday. My parents took us to church all of the time. And I have an issue nowadays. I see kids coming in, sometimes t-shirts, sometimes shorts. Listen, I know it's hot. It's the summer. All right. Newsflash, it gets hot in the summer. I just think when you're in church, you don't wear shorts. My opinion. You don't wear sneakers. You should not be texting. You should not be on your phone. You should not be playing Pokemon Go or Angry Birds or anything like that. Just another belief that I have. But Michael Jordan, you know, for example, he wrote a statement about violence last month. You remember it. And he donated $2 million to try and achieve some change. Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, they've spoken out about police-related shootings and social change. They did it at the ESPY Awards. They didn't do these things during the national anthem. And to me, that's disrespectful. It bothers me when I'm at sporting events and I see people not paying attention, goofing around. I get annoyed by that. You know, again, you can't wait 2 minutes. So I am not a supporter of Kaepernick's actions. I'm not. His former teammate, Alex Boone, was very, very critical. Boone said, quote, "You should have some blanking respect for people who served, especially people that lost their life to protect our freedom. We're out here playing a game, making millions of dollars. People are losing their lives, and you don't have the common courtesy to do that." That drove me nuts. That was Alex Boone. Victor Cruz added, "Regardless of how you feel about what's going on in America, you've got to respect the flag." Rex Ryan said that players and coaches should stand for the anthem as an opportunity to show respect to the members of the armed forces. And I agree. And Kaepernick made the point very, very clear. This is not about the military. This is not about the armed forces. He supports members of the military. And I'm not going to call the guy a liar. You know, I think he's telling the truth. However, what I don't think he understands is how other people view that anthem and how other people view the flag. For a lot of people, the flag, the anthem, it goes hand in hand with our Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, our soldiers serving overseas. They go hand in hand. So for Kaepernick, the two may not be related, but for a lot of Americans, they are. I think, you know, he missed that point. If he wants to speak out about racial oppression, about police brutality, I got no problem with that at all. That's his right. I just don't think that during the anthem is the proper time to protest. What are your thoughts? Very controversial issue. Your thoughts are welcome. Let me know what you're thinking on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. I liked what Malcolm Jenkins of the Eagles had to say about this. He's a veteran player, leader in the locker room, thoughtful guy, not afraid to express his opinions. And Jenkins said that he agrees with some of the things that Kaepernick's trying to point out, but he disagreed with his method of doing so. Here's Jenkins' take, quote, "I'd rather be doing something in the community, talking to people who can actually make some change. He's standing up for what he believes in, but all the headlines are going to be about him shaming the country and not supporting troops. It's going to be about him, not about the lives that have been lost, the injustices that are being done to minorities all across the country." Malcolm Jenkins took time this summer, just last month, to meet with the police commissioner in Philadelphia and talk about the relationship between the police and the people of Philadelphia. Just one of the things that he's doing. And I think Jenkins brought up a good point. The focus, the spotlight here should be on the issues, not the anthem and not Colin Kaepernick. Again, you can respond on Twitter at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT. Today's show is brought to you by iHome. iHome has a new WeatherTough line of Bluetooth speakers. They are waterproof, they are rust-proof, and they are military standard shockproof. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome also offers a full line of headphones and earbuds. If you're into fitness, if you travel a lot, or if you're just hanging out at home and relaxing, look at these headphones and earbuds. Really cool. Go to the website, iHomeAudio.com. Look at all of their fantastic products. You can check out the apps, the accessories. iHome is also the number one brand in digital speakers, and the sound quality cannot be beat. The website again, iHomeAudio.com. Moving on here on episode 432 of the Sports Report podcast, a lot of talk surrounding the NFC East this preseason went like this. If Tony Romo stays healthy, the Cowboys have a very good shot of winning the division. But that was an awfully big if. And Romo is hurt again. Sacked by Seattle's Cliff Avril from behind last week, Romo said he was okay after the game, but they did an MRI, and the MRI revealed a broken bone in his back. He doesn't need surgery, but there are several reports saying that he is going to miss 6 to 10 weeks. The regular season is just 2 weeks away. Now, head coach Jason Garrett will not give a timeline. He did not even rule out Romo for the opener, which is on September 11th against the Giants. Garrett says this injury is not related to the back surgeries that Romo had in 2013. Here is my big picture on Romo. He's had some great years. He's had Pro Bowl years. He's a four-time Pro Bowler. Go back and look what this guy did just 2 years ago. But, and this is a Fat Albert-sized but, he has not been able to consistently stay on the field. And that's part of the equation when you're a pro athlete. When you evaluate any player, you have to look at availability. Now, for example, I'm in my late 30s, all right? My dad is a huge Yankees fan, and he always used to tell me that Mickey Mantle would have been the best player in the game if it weren't for his injuries. And if you see highlights of Mantle at the end of his career, it's tough to watch. He would hit a home run. He would limp around the bases. He wasn't close to 100%. The point is, injuries are a factor. If I'm ranking players, I have to put Willie Mays ahead of Mickey Mantle. And again, injuries count. That's part of the deal. And that is part of Tony Romo's legacy. Are you available? That's a pivotal question in pro sports. Since 2008, Romo has missed 27 games. He missed 3 in 2008. He missed 10 in 2010. One game each in 2013 and 14 with back trouble. 12 last season due to breaking his collarbone twice. And now this. And this is why it's tough to trust the Dallas Cowboys. It's not about being a Cowboys hater. It's got nothing to do with it. It's about being a realist. The Cowboys went 1-11 without him last year. They were a train wreck. Their quarterback play was atrocious. And Dallas wound up 4-12. In this league, if you don't have a quarterback, you usually don't win. Period. End of story. Just go ask the Cleveland Browns. Okay, go talk to their fans about how important the quarterback position is. They'll tell you with that merry-go-round there. Since 2008, Romo's missed 27 games. What makes this year a little different is the emergence in Dallas of fourth-round pick Dak Prescott. And he has looked terrific so far in the preseason. 39 of 50, 450 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. He also has 2 touchdown runs. I mean, you can't argue with those numbers. Now, preseason to me means 2 things, jack and squat, but he's a rookie. And there's a buzz about this kid out of Mississippi State. He carried the Bulldogs last season. 3,800 passing yards, 66%, 29 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Plus, he ran for a team high 588 yards and 10 more scores. I mean, he did it all. He set almost every quarterback school record at Mississippi State. He had 550 total yards in one game. He had 7 touchdowns in that game. It was at Arkansas, and they won it 51-50. Think about those numbers. 550 total yards and 7 touchdowns. But that's college. This is the NFL. There have been plenty of stud quarterbacks in college that don't do squat in the National Football League. What I like about Prescott is how composed he looks. I mean, I can give you the numbers, but when you look at this guy, he isn't playing like a typical rookie. Again, it is the preseason, but he has to be a better option than the slop that the Cowboys were throwing out there at quarterback last season. I mean, that offense was unwatchable at times. Put a capital P in pathetic. Cowboys odds to win the Super Bowl changed a little bit out in Vegas. They went from 16-1 to 20-1. Not a huge drop, but they did change as you would expect. And, you know, that should happen to any team when you lose your starting quarterback. Part of the reason I think there wasn't a bigger drop is the odds makers aren't sure how many games he's going to miss. Is it 6 weeks? Is it 10 weeks? We don't know. When he does come back, every time he gets hit, Cowboys fans are going to be holding their breath. That is for sure. And if you're a Dallas fan, I mean, you have to be thinking, not again. Seriously? But like I said earlier with Romo, I probably picked Dallas to win a very mediocre NFC East. Without him, I most likely won't. How much of a setback is this Romo injury for the Cowboys? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. That's my handle on Twitter, the Sports RPT. Or maybe you are in the In Dak We Trust camp and you don't think the injury is that big of a deal. Now let's get to some fantasy football here. I've got a couple of drafts coming up soon. So, like many of you, I mean, I'm a busy guy. I don't have time to read cover to cover all these fantasy football magazines right now. So I'll print out the cheat sheets, right? And we all do it. And they rank the top 300 players or so. You can get it by position too. It's really cool, short and sweet, nice and easy. I fully understand the NFL is a passing league. I talk about it a lot. But why are the wide receivers rated so much higher than the quarterbacks? I don't get it. Here's the top 10 in a non-PPR league. PPR is points per receptions. This is a non-PPR league. So you would think the receivers would not be rated quite as high as if you are in a PPR league. And this is from ESPN, okay? It's not like I got this, you know, from my buddy's basement where he's, you know, putting away Hot Pockets and Cheetos, all right? This is from ESPN.com. The top 10, number one, Antonio Brown, wide receiver. Number two, Odell Beckham Jr., wide receiver. Three is Adrian Peterson. Four, Julio Jones. You got it. Wide receiver. So three of the top four are wide receivers. Todd Gurley's number five. Ezekiel Elliott is number six. Then we go back to the wide receiver spot with DeAndre Hopkins. He's number seven. David Johnson's number eight. Wow. Is he up there? The running back from Arizona. Devontae Freeman, the running back from the Falcons, is number nine. And then number 10, another wide receiver, A.J. Green. So five of the top 10 in fantasy football are wide receivers. What am I missing here? And I went down the list. There are four more receivers listed from number 11 to number 20. Four more. So you have nine receivers in the top 20. Three of the top four wide receivers. I don't know. First quarterback on this list is Cam Newton, and he's down at number 35. Number 35 for Cam Newton. Aaron Rodgers, number 49. Russell Wilson, number 50. Drew Brees is rated number 68. And Big Ben Roethlisberger, with that vaunted Steelers offense, Big Ben is number 69. So I need help. I'm willing to admit, I am not a fantasy football guru. I love the drafts. And that to me is the best part, getting together with your friends, some food, some cold beverages, and going through the draft. I really like that. As for checking the waiver wire and making a bazillion moves to add a second kicker or look for a hot defense or something like that, I'm not into all of that. I feel like if you draft well, that will take care of itself. But I don't get why these wide receivers are so high and why the quarterbacks are so low. There's only one quarterback. There's two in the top 50. Cam Newton, 35. Aaron Rodgers, 49. So help me out, Twitter Nation. Let me know here, because I have a couple drafts coming up and I don't want to look like an idiot. I'm on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The RPT stands for report. So the Twitter handle of the Sports Report podcast is the Sports RPT. This is the first full week of college football, and man, oh man, I hope you are ready for an epic weekend. Here's my grade eight. Listen to these games. I was going to go with the six-pack, but I had to add two more. And, you know, two more never hurt, right? I don't believe there's ever been a better week one in college football. I don't. Here's Saturday. Clemson at Auburn. Clemson, a seven-point favorite. You have Deshaun Watson there. So much buzz about Auburn a year ago. Man, did I nail that one. I told you, be careful about Auburn. I didn't think they were that good. I thought they were being really overrated, and I was on the money with that one. Well, now they're home for Clemson, a team some people think could win a national championship. UCLA at Texas A&M, the Aggies favored in College Station by three. UCLA is one of the top quarterbacks around in Josh Rosen. LSU, Wisconsin at Lambeau Field. How about that? Big Ten versus SEC at Lambeau Field. LSU favored by 10, and you'll get to see running back Leonard Fournette, who is a monster truck coming at you. And then we have Georgia, North Carolina down in Atlanta. Georgia only favored by 3. For those of you thinking, oh, Carolina is just a basketball school, they can't play football, you're wrong. this team is not bad. They have a very, very good offensive line, and coaches will tell you it starts up front, and they have a good quarterback. And the line tells you, don't sleep on the Tar Heels. Georgia only favored by 3 in the debut of Kirby Smart. Oklahoma at Houston. Oklahoma minus 10. If you don't follow college football, you're thinking, Oklahoma-Houston's a good game. Oklahoma's going to smash them. Well, Houston went 13-1 last year and beat Florida State in the Peach Bowl by 2 touchdowns. And Greg Ward is back at quarterback. How about this QB matchup? Baker Mayfield against Greg Ward of Houston. That's a good one. So that's Saturday. Sunday, Notre Dame at Texas. This was a rout last year. Behind the Woodshed special, 38-3 Irish. Notre Dame's defense, I think, has a lot of holes, a lot of question marks there. Offensively, I think they're going to score. But I hate the idea of two quarterbacks playing at the same time. I don't like it. There's that old saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. Well, they've already come out and said that they are going to let both guys play. So we'll see how it works out. Notre Dame favored by 3.5. And then Monday, Florida State, Ole Miss in Orlando. Dalvin Cook for the Seminoles at running back. Chad Kelly at quarterback for Ole Miss. He thinks he's the best quarterback in the country. And Florida State only favored by 4.5. That surprised me because Ole Miss graduated a ton. Florida State, by the way, Phil Steele's pick to win it all. And if you want more of Phil's predictions, had him on my radio show recently. My last podcast, episode 431, you'll hear a lot of Phil's predictions. I go conference by conference by conference. So you have star power. You have conference bragging rights on the line here. I don't think you can beat week one in college football. Clemson, Auburn, UCLA, Texas A&M, LSU, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Houston, Georgia, Carolina, Notre Dame, Texas, Florida State, Ole Miss. I mean, come on. That is a beautiful thing. This is episode 432 of the Sports Report. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get to baseball here. I thought the Yankees did the right thing at the deadline by trading away players for quality prospects. Continue to rebuild, get younger, develop, and bolster the farm system. I was all for it. In addition, more younger guys are getting a shot with the big club, and that includes Gary Sanchez, or as some are calling him, Sanchez. He has become the talk of Major League Baseball. There's a ton of buzz around this guy. He's 23 years old. He's a catcher from the Dominican Republic. He had 2 more hits on Sunday. His batting average is .405. He's slugging .893. The big man has 11 home runs, 8 doubles, 21 ribbies, and he's done that in only 22 games. And if you look at just this month of August, since he's been brought up, 21 games. 11 homers, 21 games. He is the fastest player in Major League Baseball history to reach 11 home runs. And you think of all the legends, you know, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Willie Mays, Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, on and on and on. Hank Aaron. This guy did it faster. Nobody got to this point quicker than Sanchez. Mark Teixeira had a great quote. He said, if Babe Ruth was hitting behind Sanchez, you'd intentionally walk him. He played the Babe Ruth card. Teixeira said that Sanchez is as hot as anyone that he's ever played with. And he's been in Major League Baseball for 14 years. Looking at the minor league numbers for Sanchez, 71 games this year with AAA Scranton Wilkes-Barre. He had 10 homers. That was in 284 at-bats. He now has 84 at-bats in the big leagues, and he has 11 homers. Figure that out. He's a .275 career minor league hitter, and he's up to .405 right now. Again, small sample size, but it's fun to watch. 2014 with Double-A Trenton, he had 13 homers in 110 games. Last year between AA and AAA, he had 18 homers in 93 games. So he has flashed power, but nobody could have expected this. He's energized the team. He's energized the fan base. He's hitting in the middle of the lineup. Why not? And I know the Yankees are only 3.5 games out in the wild card race, but because of the starting pitching, I don't view them as a legitimate contender. They are 67-62. Sanchez has made them worth watching. People are intrigued. I think it's good for the game. But I still don't, I don't have a problem with what the Yankees did at the deadline. I think that was the right move to get younger. Now to something that is not good for the game. Man, was I livid Saturday night watching Tigers Angels. Detroit is also in the wild card hunt, so every game is really important for the Tigers. It's late August. I mean, time's running out here. Home plate umpire Mike Everett was missing a bunch of calls, including some strike threes. And when you watch enough baseball, you know what a strike is, okay? Tigers finally had enough of this guy. And listen, I'm opposed to the typical American League postage stamp strike zone, but this was absurd. I mean, these were not even borderline pitches. Some of these were clearly balls, and Everett was calling them strikes. And it's not like Kershaw or Bumgarner or Scherzer was on the mound for the Angels. They were using a couple of long relievers and spot starters in Oberholzer and Chacin. So you would not think they would get the benefit of the doubt. Actually, some of the strike three calls were against veteran hitters. If anybody would get the benefit of the doubt, you'd think it'd be a player like Miguel Cabrera or Victor Martinez, Ian Kinsler. You'd think those guys who have been all-stars would get some leeway as opposed to Oberholzer, who the Phillies let go. Nope. Mike Everett's strike zone was humongous. These were not strikes, trust me. And I am not a Tigers fan. I like the Yankees, okay? So I could care less if Detroit gets in or if they're left out. I could care less. I'm just telling you what I saw, and what I saw were not strikes. V-Mart got tossed in the third inning, and he deserved it, but Everett kept glaring into the dugout at him. And man, does that really, really annoy me. Some of these umps just have big-time egos. And I guess they feel that everyone in the stands came to see them. I mean, it's a joke. And my dad was an umpire for many years in youth leagues, so I rarely get on umpires. I mean, you know that about me from listening to the show. I don't like excuses at all. I don't talk about officials a lot, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. I just don't do it. There are other factors that go into the game. But this was ludicrous. And then in the fifth inning, both hitting coach Wally Joyner, and he's been around forever, he knows what a strike is, and manager Brad Ausmus, they were both ejected for arguing the strike zone with Everett. And he wasn't done yet. Nope, just getting warmed up. In the sixth inning, he tossed J.D. Martinez, who had never been thrown out before. And J.D. said that all he told Everett was, "You're having a bad day." And Everett asked him to repeat what he said. JD did that, said, "You're having a bad day," and he got the hook. Martinez was stunned. He's never had an issue with umpires. So if you lost track, that's not one, not two, not three, four ejections by one umpire in one game, including the middle of the lineup for Detroit in what was a 3-2 loss to the Angels. An umpire should never try to influence the outcome of the game. The players should decide the outcome of the game. Everett changed the game. He threw out the 4-5 hitters for Detroit. I mean, if you're an ump and you miss some calls, and a good ump knows when he misses a call, you should expect to hear some barking from the dugout. You should not have rabbit ears keep peering in there. Just deal with it. Be a professional. Put your ego aside. Not Mike Everett. He wanted to show who the boss was. That's for sure. And I think Major League Baseball needs to review the game film with him because that was an embarrassment. Balls around the shins or the ankles are being called strikes. Really? And the Angels hitters, they weren't happy either with his strike zone, but they were winning, so they weren't going to argue as much. But Tigers have every reason to be ticked off. They are two out in the wild card race, and this is what's going on here. By the way, the Angels are 56-74. They are pathetic. They're 18 games under 500. You would never know it by looking at the season series with the Tigers. And if Detroit doesn't go in, bam, this is what you need to look at here. They lost Sunday again to the Angels 5-0. They managed four hits. Angels threw a lefty named Tyler Skaggs. He had been horrible, ERA over 5, and he throws shutout baseball. And they had the regular lineup in there. Big boppers were in there for Detroit. They could not hit a lick. They're really missing Castellanos down at third base. Really miss him. He lengthens the lineup, and you get McGee out of there, who is almost an automatic out down at third base. I mean, he's really struggling. So not having Castellanos hurts. But you still had Miguel Cabrera. You had Victor Martinez. You had J.D. Martinez. You had Kinsler. Maben's been on fire lately, and you get shut out by the Angels. And a guy with an ERA over 5, that's poor. That is really poor. If you saw what happened in this game, let me know what you thought on Twitter at the Sports RPT. And finally, I got to give a shout out to those little leaguers from Maine and Well, New York. They beat South Korea 2-1. 22,000 fans showed up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania for the championship game. New York is now the first team from the U.S. to win it all since 2011. And these kids are the first team from New York to win it since 1964. 64, man. Maine Endwell finishes the season at 24-0. Not only do you win the Little League World Series championship, you don't lose a game. And the competition that these kids are going up against and all the different regional tournaments, and then once you get to Williamsport, not to lose one game, 24-0, that's incredible. So great job by those little leaguers from New York. That's one of those summer events I circle on the calendar. I don't know why. I just always enjoy watching it. And now we have a champ from here in the U.S. And that'll do it. Of course, you can respond to everything. Romo, Kaepernick, crazy umpires, Gary Sanchez, Little League World Series. Let me know what you're thinking on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. College football, of course, the Sports RPT. Next Monday, I'll do a big, big NFL preview for you here on the podcast. So have a great week, everybody. I'll talk to you again next Monday. This has been episode number 432. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv and iTunes.